overflowing with love. I am overflowing with happiness. I am filled with the power to make a change, to create a brand new life.
Welcome to the podcast of the Sunday Celebration from the Center for Spiritual Living in Huntsville, Alabama. We hope you feel the grace, the beauty, and the love of our community as you hear the message of the week.
Thank you so much. That's one of my favorite songs. It's a chant by Karen Drucker. Last year at the Circle of Love gathering in Banning Mills, she had a new CD, and that was on her CD. And she talked about being in the airport, and there was this person that was lost, and she could tell they were lost. And so she went up and she offered her presence to that person. And as she told that story, she sang that song about changing the world one heart at a time. She was to go back to Santa Rosa the following weekend, and she was going to be speaking in the Santa Rosa Center for Spiritual Living. And they had just had the fires in Santa Rosa. We remember those from last year. And she said, I don't know what I'm going to say. And I said, Karen, just sing that song and share how we're here to change the world one heart at a time, to be there for one another. So what if that's the great gift we offer the world, is our heart, the open heart? We can touch the pain and the suffering. You know, my beautiful Jean over here, she said in one of our classes, I guess here we're to just give love and receive love. And I said, yeah, that's it, just to give and receive. And it comes from the strangest places. It can come from an iguana. It can come from the little chickadees are back at our bird feeder. Trey was concerned. He says, the chickadees have disappeared. They always lived. And this morning I texted him, he's up in Maine. I said, the chickadees are back. And he said, oh, the chickadees are back at the bird feeder. You know, I was sharing with the group this morning, I was filling up the bird feeder this morning, and there was this huge cockroach in the bird seed. And of course, I said, what are you doing here? And I'm chasing after the cockroach, telling him to get out, and he's chasing around, and it was not a very pleasant sight. I saw my anger come out, and so when I finally filled up the bird seed, I put the cup over the bug, and I know, violent act from the minister. And so when I told Trey there's a huge cockroach in the bird seed, he said, well, David, you have to liberate the cockroach. So before I came here, I took the lid off the bird seed, and I tilted it over, and I said, go on, honey, go on. And he crawled out, and he scurried through the garage. And one heart at a time, one bug at a time, one bird at a time. You know, it's an opportunity. I was talking to my beloved Mark Accomando, and, you know, he's going through a lot of transition and a lot of changes, and He was reflecting. He said, I spoke in the Palm Springs church last Sunday, and I was reflecting when I came to Huntsville. I was maybe 30 years old. And he said, by the time I got to be 35, I was still saying the same old message. I'm lonely. Why is my life so pathetic? And he said, and I remember what you would say to David. He said, I said, what did I say, Mark? He said, well, you asked me, how is that serving you to hold on to that story of being in that victim place? And he said, it's like it took maybe 10 years before the light bulb went on and I realized I was creating my own level of suffering by identifying with that first level of consciousness. You know, here at the center, we talk about these the four kingdoms of consciousness. This comes out of Marcia Sutton's work. She said the lowest kingdom is kingdom number one. It's called the victim consciousness. It's the to-me consciousness. We have a president that lives in the to-me consciousness. You know, and they're always saying there's something wrong and they're against me and they're for me. And if you think life is happening to you, you're in this first kingdom. But ultimately, we need to at least get to the second level, which is the for me consciousness. When something happens and it's not comfortable, that was really for me. It was moving me forward in life. It's funny, I had a heart attack a couple years ago, and that was one of the greatest gifts for me. I was talking to a colleague who recently gave notice in his church, and when he did last Sunday, they started screaming at him from the congregation. He gave them a month's notice, but after the screaming that came from the audience, he said, that's it, I'm leaving today. And I spoke with him yesterday, and he was crying, and he was feeling a little bit in kingdom number one. I had reminded him, though, of this beautiful seven words that will save your life. When the horse is dead, get off. And I reminded him that he's been riding a dead horse for a very long time. And I reminded him of his first marriage. I said, remember that first marriage? And he started to laugh.
how you stayed on that horse for a very long time until you had the courage to let go. So what if these things that life, maybe there was the 2x4s, they're here for us to move us forward in life. It doesn't feel good at the time, but it's necessary. And then, of course, the third level of consciousness is the through me consciousness, which basically Mother Teresa said, I'm a pencil in the hand through which the universe, through which love does its work. Or Hafez, I'm a hole in the flute through which the Christ plays its music. So you realize that I'm an instrument for the divine. It's not me. It's that which moves through me. Jesus was there. I of myself do nothing. It's this beloved presence within that does the work. That's the through me consciousness. And then, of course, the last level, the highest level, which very few attain, is the as me, where you realize you're it, that all there is that. And boy, you have to be really humble to know that. It says in Psalms, what is man that thou art mindful of him? Thou hast created him a little lower than the angels and hath crowned him with honor and glory. Do you know how humble you have to be to know that you are here to glorify the one through your example, through your life? We were talking about Mother Teresa in the circle this morning, those beautiful revealing circles. If you haven't come, take advantage of them because they really are heart-opening experiences. And it came very early this Sunday morning, and on my desk was a picture of David Tharp, this man who came to the center. You know, there are no accidents. Ernest Holmes says, divine love brings together and maintains together those who belong together. He called me from London, and he said, you and I do the same work. And I'm going to be coming to Alabama. My mother's in a nursing home in Athens. I would love to come to your center and do what I do. And what he does is liberate the soul through movement. And so David Tharp came here. And for years, he would fly either from England or from Japan to our Circle of Love gatherings until, of course, he made his transition. And David had lived all over the world. He lived in India. He worked with Mother Teresa in Calcutta. And he told this wonderful story about her. The AIDS crisis was hitting India. And he was sitting with the nuns around the table, and he said, so sisters, tell me, how does one get AIDS? Well, through dirty needles, yes. Through such and such, yes. And he says, what else, sisters? What else? They couldn't think of anything else. He said, sex, sisters, sex. It comes through sex. That's a David Tharp story. Anyway, so he told the story that some very wealthy person was coming to build a wing in that hospital in Calcutta, and they wanted it to be named after the company. And Mother Teresa refused to put the name of the company on the logo. And they said, what? After giving you all this money? She said, if I put your name up there, I would have to put every rickshaw driver and every person who's been giving rupees and what they can. So she had her voice. She stood up for what was, in her mind, integrity. So what if these people, like Mother Teresa, are the examples for us to look at who change the world one heart at a time? She says, everyone I see in the streets, the children, she said, I see the face of the beloved. I see the face of the Christ in everyone. I was sharing with them in the Revealing Circle this morning. I was watching a thing on PBS called Reveal, and there were positive stories about people who were making a difference on the planet. And the one that really impacted me, and I even wrote it down. I was working on my sermon, and I was watching this PBS thing, and I wrote, no more deaths. And I got up this morning, and I thought, what the heck? No more deaths. And then, you know how those little light bulbs come on, and I remembered what it was about. Two women at the border of Texas and Mexico. Two women who, there are places where the immigrants are crossing, fleeing their country. And these two women, and many bodies are found there, many, many deaths. So these two women gather up water in big jugs, and they go out on these paths, and they leave the water for people so they won't dehydrate, and they leave food for them. And their mantra is no more deaths. So when Trey gets back, we're going to donate to these two women because they're changing the world in the way that they can because they care about it. So for those of you who are here for the first time or haven't been here in a long time, the theme for this month is ensouling ourselves. And there are no accidents. When Trey and I went to Brevard, Tennessee, we were in this funky little house, and I always go to the bookcase to see if there's an interesting book. And the book they had there was The Handbook for the Soul. It was a compilation of some of the great thinkers on ensouling ourselves. And so I thought I'll just do a whole series. And this is the last of four talks. The first week I talked about soul moments. You know, the Bible says, and I remember as a little kid growing up in the Judeo-Christian tradition, very little of it made sense. And I was one of those precocious children like Terry who questioned the doctrine of the church. But the one thing they said that made total sense, I heard it from within my soul, was, what does it profit man if he gains the whole world and loses his soul? Huh. So what is this thing called soul, this funny thing called soul, this truth of our being? Ram Dass, one of the people in the book, he talks about soul, and he draws a circle, and he says, imagine the circumference is your current life, this life that you've been given for however many years. But he said, underneath that, in the circle, are lifetime after lifetime after lifetime of this eternal soul that we all are. And at the center of the soul, we all share that center, is this presence, this one life, God, spirit, essence, whatever. And then you hear Goethe say, what is God but a simple essence, the cost of which is nothing less than everything? So if you would know this, we must give all this false identity with the circumference. Ah, the me person. And so the longer, if you're around this journey home, realizing that you've already arrived, that that home is already here, that that presence is already here, and the older you get, and maybe you'll be blessed by touching death and realizing that when you touch death, you never leave. The most amazing feeling I had when they were wheeling me down on the gurney and tearing off my clothes was realizing I have no embarrassment. There's none of that. It all goes away. I didn't care. And but I had also no fear. And I had one deep, 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 deep remembrance that I didn't get to say I love you to the people that matter. So when I came back, everyone I saw, I kept saying, I love you. How many times have I told you I love you, Teresa? It's hard. Maybe a million. It just, yeah. Don't wait till those moments happen to appreciate this sacred thing called life. So soul moments. And then the week after that, I talked about, what did I talk about the second week? I try to recap for the, soul work. The work of the soul. This whole book is about how to nourish the soul. But then someone said, what if the soul is here nourishing us? And the work is to give it space to come through. Now, the more I do research, and I love doing inquiry into the soul, to paint with soul, to express with soul, to make love with soul, to cook with soul, to hear your music with soul. In the indigenous people, they would ask you, when was the last time you danced? When was the last time you sang? When was the last time you let your soul be on fire with story and metaphor and images? Because the soul loves to play in that realm. The soul doesn't want to get too serious, too conceptual, too intellectual. The ego wants to be in control. Anybody have control issues? All ego. The soul wants to live in trust and spontaneity and mystery and wow. So could we allow that trust in this life, in that expression? And the work is to hear the soul when it calls you. So to remember those moments. You know, I shared with you, I think, on the second week, once I had let go of the dead horse that I was riding, which was my job in New York City, which nearly killed me, and I ended up in New York City Hospital, and my soul was saying, thank God it nearly killed you. It took that to get you out of New York City. It took that to get you out of a horrible relationship. And I'm in San Francisco with Trey, and we're just beginning our relationship. And we go to the musical, The Chorus Line, and we're sitting high in the balcony, and down there, little tiny Donna McKechnie is singing, God, I'm a dancer, and a dancer dances. Give me somebody to dance for. Give me some place to fit in. All I ever needed was the music and the mirrors and the chance to dance for you. And in that moment, my soul said, go back to graduate school in dance. Well, I wasn't meant to be a dancer in that sense. But what I was meant was to be lying on a dance floor and have my soul speak to me a second time when I heard the choreographer say, all movement is discovered, it's not invented. And that took me to a discovery process, which took me to my master's thesis, which was on the anatomy of inspiration. Where does inspiration come from? What is that something that's awakening within us? Wow, soul moments, soul work, to listen to the soul when it's waking you up. Isn't that the beauty of all of this? There's this something that is greater than us that wants our attention. In The Science of Mind, Ernest Holmes says, the thing you're looking for, you're looking with. So what's looking? What's yearning? What's aching to be known? And it will have its way with you. In the Gospel of Thomas, one of the best things around the Christian teaching, the Christian church disavows it. That's why it's probably the best. Anyway, it's just the logians, the sayings of the master. They're saying the sayings of the teacher. And one of the great sayings in the Gospel of Thomas says, if you liberate that which is within you, that which is within you will save you. If you do not liberate that which is within you, that which is within you will destroy you. Let those who have ears to hear, hear. So what is this thing that's wanting to live your life, to be creating and expressing? Could that be our work? And then last Sunday, I talked about the soul gifts that come in disguises. Those are those things where you get the 2x4 from life, and oh, it can't be that, it can't be that, and it really is that. It's the very thing that's moving us forward into a new direction. And sometimes we stay too long at the fair. You remember that song? I wanted the music to play on forever. Have I stayed too long at the fair? I said that to my friend up in Canada. I said, maybe you've stayed a little bit too long, and the universe is saying it's time to go, and it's okay to leave. And I said to him, as he was crying and laughing at the same time, I said, you know, I'm reminded of the movie Gypsy, a true story based on the life of Gypsy Rose Lee. And Mama Rose was one of my heroes. She was the manipulative mother who manipulated her two daughters. It's a true story. And Gypsy Rose Lee wrote about her mama, Mama Rose. And I saw it on Broadway with Angela Lansbury. And at the end of the musical, when Gypsy leaves and goes off and does her thing, and Baby June goes off and does her thing, all that's left is Mama Rose. And the very last song in the musical, Mama's on a move. Mama's got the stuff. Mama, Mama. And she says, this one's for me. And then the big song is curtain up. Light the lights. I got nothing to hit but the heights. Starting here, starting now. Honey, everything's coming up. Roses and sunshine. Everything's coming up. Bright lights and daffodils. Everything's coming up. Roses. For me. For me. For me. And Angela Lansbury got in a deep squat and she said, for me. And I said that to my friend. I said, this is your curtain up. Light the lights. You're getting the hell out of there and you're going to have a whole new life. And he's laughing. And then this morning I texted him and I reminded him of Victor Hugo, who said, be like the bird who, pausing for a while on boughs too slight, feels them give way beneath her, yet sings knowing she hath wings. So what if life, those are those soul gifts in disguise. They did you a great gift when they screamed at you and yelled at you and said, you're not enough for us. Then that's a sign maybe it's time to fly the coop and to live your life and not to identify with something, to make it happen. Have you ever noticed that you're not here to make something happen or change somebody? And when the universe is giving you a message, maybe it's time to go. Maybe it is time to go. Rumi also says, just like Jesus in the Gnostic Gospels, Rumi says, what does Rumi say? Oh, he says, there is that one thing that each one of us came here to do. That would be your soul. And if you do everything else and fail to allow that gift to give, it's as if you weren't even here. It's as if the universe gave you a beautiful silver scabbard and you nailed it to the wall and you hung potholders on it. Wow. So what if this soul something wants to emerge, and when you get ready, it'll start speaking to you? One of my current loves is this guy named Jeff Foster, who went through the dark night of the soul, and that awoke him to something much, much deeper. And he speaks from that soul place. And he wrote, here's his latest book, it's called The Joy of True Meditation. And he wrote this little thing about the voice of your soul that won't be hushed up. Remember, if you liberate it, it will save you. If you don't. And there comes a time when you can't push it down anymore, this thing called soul. And here's how he puts it. He said, the truth of your soul will always come out. And he says, you can try to suppress the truth of your soul. You can threaten, punish, enslave, crucify those who dare to speak it. You can run from it. You can try to numb it. You can silence it. You can smother it. You can shame it, ridicule it, throw all manner of lies and manipulations and have truths at it. But in the end, your soul will always win, because the soul's truth is the truth of life. And it takes courage to speak the soul's truth. You may risk losing your livelihood, your relationships, your reputation, your worldly possessions, your friends, your family, and even your life. You may be quaking as you speak it, dripping with sweat, nauseous and dry-mouthed, and on the verge of fleeing. But in the end, you cannot hold back the soul. He said, it is more powerful than you. It will outlast you and outlive you. You were born from it, and you will return to it. It speaks through you. You are a vessel of your soul's truth. And when you know this truth and you declare it to the universe and to all who will listen, you may feel the doubt and the guilt and the shame of it too, the terror of abandonment, old thoughts warning you to shut the hell up, but you will feel so alive in your soul. So on your path, so aligned with your calling, so willing to face the consequences moment by moment, breath by breath, and those who want your soul's truth will gather around you. Those who want your soul's truth will gather around you. Anybody ready to leave? And you will know your true family. Huh. You know, I have a blood family, somewhat evangelical. You're my true family. Y'all. So there is no greater power on earth, no more potent agent for change, no more thrilling experience than you. You're wild and alive with your own soul's truth. So could we give that soul permission to flower within us, even if the world doesn't accept it or understand it, because it is so creative and passionate? It's what you are. And if not now, when? Right? So yeah, it's kind of strange, isn't it? It's not about chasing after what we thought we were supposed to achieve, the world's approval. But in a way, I like what Seamus said in the revealing service. Had I not been a, what did you call yourself, Seamus? A misfit? I wouldn't have found this place. You know, when I came to the center many, many years ago, I was a lost soul, a lost soul. And I came and I found my soul in this community, that which was screaming from within to let me out, to be who I am. It wants to be what we are. So I was sharing with Mark Accomando. He calls his center the spirit, the center of spiritual awakening in Palm Desert. And I said, Mark, have you read any of the Locke Kelly material? And he said, no. And I said, well, we taught a book called Shift into Freedom here. And Locke Kelly talks about the soul's awakening at three levels. He says, first, you wake up. You wake up to your beingness, that there is this something really that wakes up within us. Then the second thing, and I said, this is what you really do, Mark, is you wake in. And by waking in, you go through those many layers that we have not embraced. You know, the fearful Freddy, the confused Curtis, the wounded Willie, the guilty George, all those layers that have to be brought into that field and embraced one heart at a time, one sub-personality at a time. That's that waking in. It's not about shaming the parts of ourself, but it's about integrating them. That's the work that Glory G and I do on Wednesday nights, and it's very, very fulfilling. The waking in. And the last phase is the waking out phase, where you move out into the world in service to the one in the many, in service to the one in the many, and the many in the one, knowing that it's all you, one heart at a time, one moment at a time, one hand at a time, one embrace at a time, one puppy at a time, in Jody's case, one kitten at a time. Yeah, that's waking out into the world. And you know, the idea when you serve another, you're the one that's really served. I learned that when I was working with Vandana. I was there for her throughout this whole process of dying, and I realized right up until the very end, she gave me the great gift of being intimate at those times. So what if the soul work and the soul creation is all of this stuff? So let me give you a little Matthew Fox. He's the one that wrote the little article on soul creation that inspired this final talk, and he starts off with a quote from Einstein. Might as well get a good scientist in there. And Einstein says this about soul. He says, we are souls dressed up in biochemical garments, and our bodies are the instruments through which the soul plays its music. There's third kingdom. You are an instrument for the divine. Your body is merely an instrument so that the soul can play its music, can sing its song, can paint its portrait, can write its poetry. That's all the soul that's doing it. You don't really do it. Have you ever noticed that any great artist will say, you know, I don't know what happened. Something moved through me. When I did that master's thesis on the anatomy of inspiration, everyone that I researched talked about this something that would move through them. And they say, if I do not allow it to express in the moment it's coming, I lose it. William Butler Yeats said, when the inspiration comes, I'm writing it down, and if I drop my pen and pick it up, it could be gone. I found this thing that was left on my Xerox machine. I don't know who it is. But it's a poem by Mary Oliver. And I've asked the students this week in the Tuesday, Wednesday morning class to bring a poem that awakens their soul. And it was inspired by Parker Palmer's little idea from Henry David Thoreau. And he asked the question, what would be the poem that I would write if I could? And he said, I can't live my life and write the poem at the same time. So what is the poem? What is the expression of the soul that would come through you? And this is a Mary Oliver poem that was left on the Xerox machine. There are no accidents. So here's what Mary Oliver said, a soul moment. She says, I don't know where prayers go or what they do. Mary Oliver. Do cats pray while they sleep or half asleep in the sun? She asks. Does the opossum pray as it crosses the street? Another question. How about the sunflower? She says. Or that old black oak that's growing older every year. I know I can walk through the world along the shore or under the trees with my mind filled with things of little importance in full self-attendance, a condition I can't really call being alive. So she said, is a prayer a gift? You know, there's a beautiful thing about living in the question. We're not here to find the answers, but to stay in the question. So she's inquiring into what is prayer? Is a prayer a gift, or is it a petition, or does it even really matter, she asks. The sunflowers blaze. Maybe that's their way. And maybe the cats are sound asleep, and maybe they're not. She said, while I was thinking this, I happened to be standing just outside my door with my notebook opened, which is the way I begin every morning. And then a wren in the spirit began to sing. And he was positively drenched in enthusiasm. I don't know why, and yet why not? I wouldn't persuade you from whatever your beliefs are or whatever you don't believe. That's your business. But I thought of the wren singing. What could this be if it isn't a prayer? So I just listened and my pen in the air. Mary Oliver. Jane Stearns gave me a beautiful gift in one of the classes, and she, probably one of the most expensive things we sold at the auction last year was this birdhouse that she painted. And she made one for me, and I hung it in the garden in a very sacred place, and I didn't realize it was in full sun. And of course, the Wren family decided that they're going to nest in it because it's so pretty, but they're in hot afternoon baking sun. So it's hung from an old dead tree. So I climbed up on the ladder, and I took an old basket, and I jimmy-rigged the basket on top of the bird feeder so it would shade the bird feeder. And Mama and Papa Wren go in there, and the little baby bird's beaks are sticking out. And is that a prayer? Is it a moment? It's just a connection. Is it waking out into the world? They're all our family. They're all our children, even the little winged ones. So this is what Matthew Fox said. He said, soul work requires paying attention to life, to the laughter, and to the sorrow. The enlightening and the frightening, the inspiring and the silly, Tia. It's been said that God delights to watch the soul grow. Ernest Holmes says we were created for the delight of God. Is your life delighting the universe? Are you delighting in the life that you've been given? Ask that question. Perhaps we were put here to expand our souls through the experience of life, to expand our souls. And if you do nothing else and you failed to know this soul thing, have you really honored this incredible life that you've been given? You know, when this goes, the form goes, the soul will linger on. It will move into its next incarnation. Do you want to come back and repeat the same karma? I have some bad karma. You know, there's a man in the neighborhood. He moved in and he was going to renovate some of the older houses. And so he was buying up some of the houses in our neighborhood in Five Points. And he came over and thanked us for our beautiful yard, and his wife is a broadcaster on the news. I'm not going to say her name. And as he buys the house, he cuts the trees down in the yards. And he uses Roundup everywhere, and everything is killed with Roundup. And there was this one tree that was one of the most beautiful ones in the backyard of the house across the street. And for 2 weekends, one branch at a time, it was coming down. And of course, I have a husband that gets very upset when that happens. So he finally drove over to their house, and he confronted him as he's mowing his yard. And he said, sir, we're about planting trees. We're not about cutting them down. And he turned to Trey, and he said, get a life. Oh. So I thought, well, that's how we're going to have a relationship with this man. And so we haven't spoken since. And, of course, I try to keep peace in the neighborhood. So Trey's up in Maine, and I'm walking down the alleyway. The alley has all been rounded up. There's nothing green living in that alley anymore. And Bert decided, when I let him off the leash, to poop right behind his garage door. A very large poop. And then the little pug, Humphrey, went right next to it and did his little circle and left his mushy poop right next to the big bird poop. And I thought, do I have a poop bag in my pocket? Oh, I need to save that for the next encounter. And I just headed on. True confessions. Forgive me, for I know not what I do. Oh, gosh. So Matthew Fox says here, he said, I spoke with a fellow who has AIDS, and he told me that the day that he found out that he was going to die was the day that he began to live. You know, I was there in the 80s when the AIDS crisis hit the Atlanta community, and I saw again and again and again that beautiful quilt that you cover yourself with, Bobby, from that young AIDS victim. Yeah, even my prayer partner, the one I used to have that's in New York State, he said, I would never wish this upon anybody, but he said, it took me to life. By being told I was going to die, it took me to life, where every day became sacred. So he says, we must nourish our soul, for without a strong soul, we would stumble through life in a superficial way. Without the passion that the soul gives, we would not be living our life. Instead, we would simply be waiting to die. In a sense, the soul is our appetite, driving us to eat from the banquet of life. You remember that wonderful movie, Eddie Mame, when she said life is a banquet and most poor suckers are starving to death? What if our soul wants to feast from the banquet of life, the sadness and the joy, the pain and the happiness? So he says, in a sense, soul is our appetite driving us to eat from the banquet of life, and people filled with the hunger of soul take food from every dish that's before them, whether that dish is sweet or whether that dish is bitter. Into every life, you know, they say two men looked out of a prison cell. One saw mud, the other saw stars. And so we have some painful moments in our life. The question is it going to make you better or is it going to make you bitter? And if it makes you bitter, then you've lost the battle. But the soul would say, hey, this is here for you, if we can find the gift in it. And so he goes on to say, one of the ways he nourishes the soul for people who do not know how to live all the experiences of life, I would suggest that they begin by looking for something that gives them joy and spending some time with that. What brings joy into your life? You know, I think the most joyful thing I have is walking my dogs to see the world through their eyes. They have so much joy. Or, I don't know, or walking through the garden and observing the little flowers. What brings you joy? Could you honor that? That's feeding your soul, Matthew Fox says. Another thing he says is very important for people to have rituals. Rituals are sacred experiences. Glory G did her shamanic ritual. I wish I could have been there this Wednesday night, but I was seeing one of my students who came to town to see me, and we went out to dinner, and there was another ritual, seeing an old friend that you hadn't seen in many years, like Jan coming back into my life, and making that connection. Rocky hadn't seen in many years. Ron and Jereen, many years, and they come back into your life. And when I saw Christy with her new fiancé, you know, I married her to her first wife, and then that one didn't end, and there was a second wife, and then there was a third wife, and this is the fourth wife. I think the fourth is a charm. Anyway, we had this wonderful, wonderful evening of together, and you know, you just pick up the pieces from where you left off. And the beautiful ritual of just going out and sitting outside and having that connection, it's special. So he says rituals are very important. He said, look for ways to be with the great mystery, however it's defined. Becoming involved with the community and with rituals are excellent ways to nourish your soul. I think that one of our problems as a people is that we lack common rituals. The simple ritual of lighting a candle and inviting in the light. The simple ritual of saying grace at the table. I used to hate saying grace. Now I love saying grace. And you know, when Trey and I go out to dinner, which is very rare, Trey has this gesture. He puts his arms out like this. And I know what he means. Because then everybody takes hands. And then he says, David. And David says, and let's open to the love that we're consuming right now. Right? It's a ritual. It's a simple ritual. But it sets the tone of intimacy. So Matthew Fox is big about creating the rituals for the soul that are meaningful to you. He talks about the different paths. There's the via positiva, the via negativa, the via creativa, and the via transformativa. And he says these are all ways. Of course, he was a Catholic monk. The via positiva is the path of focusing on joy, those positive things in your life. For Teresa, maybe running and getting in touch with that zone. I remember when I used to be a runner before my knees told me they didn't like it. I was doing it to find that zone place. You know, it was almost like I wanted to get into that altered state of consciousness. Via positiva, that's called. The via negativa is a path that I understand more deeply. That's the path of darkness. That's the path of sorrow, the path of grief. You know, the path of looking in the Jungian thing to that unhealed stuff. It's all portals to the soul, all of it. And then he talks about the via creativa. Tia knows that one. It's the creative process, when I can invite the creative process. You know, I realized that the shamans would say, when was the last time you sang and when was the last time you danced? And I got here to the center at 7:30 this morning. I'm an early riser. I was up at 5:30. I'm here at the center and I'm putting fresh flowers all out. Aren't they pretty? From our big sunflowers. And then I put on Eddie Watkins Jr. and he starts playing this beautiful music, and I found myself dancing all over the church, and my soul was saying, you finally gave yourself permission to dance. And when Tia came in, I said, do you ever dance by yourself, Tia? She said, all the time. And somehow my soul needed confirmation it's okay to do that. Yeah, so that's the via creativa. And then the via transformativa is when you're doing something to affect change in the world. Via transformativa is the experience of compassion, struggle, doing justice, and using your imagination to assist something that transforms the world. I think everything we do here is about transforming consciousness, not through effort, but through surrender and trust. Are you willing to transform? Are you willing to have that metamorphosis to become who you really are? This jubilant and beholden soul. Emerson talks about prayer, and he says, what are prayer but the contemplation of the facts of life with a jubilant and beholden soul? So what if we make that first connection to this something that we all share, and we wake up, this thing wakes up in us, and it's grateful. It was so interesting in that large circle this morning. Everybody started off being grateful. Grateful for the anger. Grateful for the way we demean ourselves by saying, I'm just a so-and-so. I'm just a gigolo everywhere I go. No, it's just, you know, I got all the stuff in here. But it's all here showing us something. Lastly, I want to give you a little soul reading from Mark Nepo, because he, to me, he lives in the soul. And I'll use that as the final launching pad for our little closing meditation. He talks about inside every burden. And he says, I don't know why, but for all that I've been through, almost dying, almost living, seeking love until I became love, seeking truth till I've become the question, for all of it, I'm certain that inside every nut is a seed, and inside every fear is a pin of light, and inside every desperation is a drop of being, and inside every loss there's an inch of what could never be lost, and inside every burden is a pearl of worth, the soul. And he said, I don't know why, but I'm certain that that pearl of worth is waiting for us to dive to the bottom of all our troubles, to pry the shell of burden open, and to bring the gem we were born to carry to the surface. The pearl of great price that Jesus spoke about. Sell everything for this pearl. So I'd like to just close your eyes for just a second and smile. Emerson calls it the infinite presence that lies stretched in smiling repose at the center of our being. And inside that beautiful smile of the universe is this pearl of great price, is the beauty of our soul, waiting for us to put our attention on it. And so by putting our attention on that, that essential nature of our being, we're allowing it to be seen. I see you. I hear you. You're a part of me. My heart is open to love. And so as we put our attention on that essence self that we all share, it smiles back at us. Finally, you've come home to me. I've been waiting for you your whole life for you to acknowledge that I am that eternal part of you that was never born and never dies and yet is always there. I will never leave you or forsake you. I am here to be who you are. The truth of me is now given permission to unveil itself and to reveal itself. We call them revealing circles because Ernest Holmes said there is nothing to heal. There is only this truth of our being to be revealed. So we come here to awaken into being the soul that only knows itself everywhere in the world, with so much gratitude for this ever expanded awareness that gets clearer, easier, effortless. It's doing all the doing. All we have to do is open and allow. Take a deep breath and give a sigh for the divine. And so it is. So will our beautiful ushers come forward. I'm loving this music thing here. Tambourine, guitar, Teresa. Okay, take your offering if you have it and put it over your heart, or just place your hands over your heart and just say with me, divine love, consecrates my gift. It goes forth to heal, to bless, and to prosper. It returns to me multiplied abundantly. And I am prospered. Thank you. So it is.
to make a change, to create a brand new life.
Thank you for listening to our podcast. For more information, visit our website at www.cslhuntsville.org. To create a brand new